Welcome back to Be More Super, the podcast, where we explore the world of entertainment with celebrity interviews from your favorite movies and TV shows. So grab your popcorn and let's get to know these stars better and what really makes them super. We are brought to you by PropStore.com, where you can find your very own piece of entertainment memorabilia from screen-used props to costumes. Now, here's your host, Brian Garner.
So on this week's episode of Be More Super, the podcast, I'm so excited. I've been tracking this man down for many, many weeks and finally have him on the show direct from his Skybox spaceship, which he's sitting in right now. It's a wonderful Brian Do Chua. Did I get it right?
Yeah, yes. You did. That's exactly yes. It. That's exactly it.
See, there we go. That is the first vocal direction from a very successful voice actor ticked off my bucket list. So there you go. So who knows? I might have a future in the voice world, maybe, because I've been told I've got a face for radio. So who knows? But no, thank you so much, Brian, for coming on to the show. It's so weird saying Brian, I've got to say. I've never had a Brian, so welcome. Congratulations on being my first Brian on the show, except for myself.
Thank you. Yeah, I'm really happy to be here.
And I've got to say, what a cool, cool environment that you're in right now. And we're going to talk about that, because there is a lot that goes into voice work. There's a lot of stuff in the background that people don't realize. But we're going to talk about that later in the interview. So the first thing I want to ask you is, how did you discover your passion for voice work? Because it's just incredible. I mean, we see people on TV and we watch these awesome cartoons. I grew up with like Thundercats and He-Man and She-Ra. My first crush was on She-Ra, I've got to say. Mm-hmm. And Jessica Rabbit, actually. So how did you discover your passion for this industry?
Yeah, it was... I mean, I think as a lot of us, when we were younger growing up, I think a lot of us really enjoyed cartoons and watching cartoons, right? Saturday morning, you know, you get your giant bowl of cereal and you go downstairs or wherever the TV is and you just watch for as long as you can. And I know that things have changed now, right, with streaming and everything, but that's how it used to be. And then you'd have to wait a week for the next episode to come out, right, and all of that. So I used to watch a lot of cartoons as a kid. And eventually I realized that this was an actual career path. I was very fortunate that a voice actor was on TV basically as himself, right? You could actually see him. And he was just doing a bunch of voices. And I went, wait, so it's not like a computer generated thing. The characters don't actually live inside of my TV. This is an actual career path. That's really cool. And I didn't really give it a lot of thought for a couple of years. And then as I got older, right, when I became a teenager, you know, they start asking you, what do you want to be when you grow up? You know, you want to start thinking about a career path of some sort. And I went, well, what if I tried voice acting specifically? Because I was really involved in choir and drama in school. That was kind of my main focus, right, outside of my studies. And so basically what I did was I had a really crappy desktop microphone. I had a free recording software. And when I was a teenager, I just practiced. I just recorded myself. I would play it back. I got used to the sound of my voice. Obviously, my voice was still developing right at the time. But I got very comfortable behind a microphone. And then I got really lucky, quite frankly. An agent came to my high school and wow, was talking about on camera acting, because I lived in Vancouver. I mean, I was born, raised Vancouver. I'm still in Vancouver, one of the few that sticks around. And, you know, the agent was talking about on camera acting, right? How to get involved in on camera acting as a, you know, as a child actor, essentially. And I pulled her aside afterwards and I said, do you rep voice actors? And she goes, no, but my friend does. Send me your stuff. And I went, great. Absolutely. And then freaked out after she left because I had no stuff to send, right? Like, they wanted a resume and a demo tape and all of that stuff. And so I put something together. I created a resume with all of my high school theater, and I just sent it to her. And a month and a half later, they reached out, and I got signed. That's how I got my first agent.
A month and a half, though. I mean, sending that and waiting. Did you ever think that they're not going to get back to me? You know, this is it.
Yeah, that definitely crossed my mind. I mean, I was so busy as a kid. I mean, I'm still busy now, to be completely frank with you. But, you know, like I got really good at, you know, over the years, I've gotten really good at just distracting myself from all of that, all of those thoughts and that crazy. But it definitely, you know, I was definitely refreshing my email a lot when I was a kid going, are they going to get back to me or not? That definitely happened a bit.
Awesome. I mean, it's so great. I mean, when you said at the beginning about Saturday morning cartoons, I love how universal it is, because no matter what country you was in, you had your version of Saturday morning cartoons, and things have changed now. And you know, I don't think kids are watching cartoons in the way that we used to, or I used to, because, you know, nothing's ever going to replace He-Man with his, you know, message at the end of every episode, which I thought was class. I really did. But obviously they've reinvented it now with the help of Kevin Smith, you know, who's got involved, and with She-Ra as well. I mean, how challenging was it then? So obviously you get this break and you get an agent. I mean, what sort of obstacles have you had to face over, you know, your early career?
That's a really good question. I think the big thing was, I would say, that comes to mind right now. And I do, you know, I did a lot of theater as a kid, and as a young adult. I work in on camera as well now. I do a bit of on camera here and there, but voice is still my priority. And that's how I got into the business, really. And, when I was starting out, a lot of my auditions were via MP3. So I would send out a lot of self-tapes, essentially a lot of MP3 auditions as a young performer. And, you know, as a young performer, you know, you don't really get any direction. You know, you just get the script and you do it. You do your interpretation and, you know, you either hear back from it or you don't. And that was around the time that we started to switch from in-person auditions in voice and animation specifically to MP3. They were still doing in-person animation auditions at the time, and we still do them occasionally, right? Especially with callbacks and all of that. But for the most part, you know, when I was brought up in the business, especially this was now, what, 10, 12 years ago, you know, I was recording MP3 auditions and getting no feedback. And that was definitely a bit frustrating because, you know, you don't know, am I doing this, you know, are people liking what I'm doing, right? That was definitely something that was very challenging. But I was also able to get in the room occasionally and, you know, occasionally getting into the room to collaborate with production, sometimes other actors. That gave me a lot of feedback, right? And so, yeah, just really grateful for that.
I mean, can you remember your first job and can you talk us through what it was and what it was like to work on? Because I've got to say, I mean, anyone's first anything has got to be so scary, especially in this sort of industry. So what was your first job and what was it like to work on?
I was, totally. I was terrified. I was the Little Prince. I dubbed 3 episodes of an animated series. It was a French animated series called The Little Prince. I played a character, I think his name was Terry, T-H-E-R-Y, if I remember correctly. Did a couple episodes of that. Very nervous, but it went really well. I mean, I was really fortunate. I had a voice director at the time, James Quargle, and he really showed me the ropes on, you know, microphone technique. Here are a couple of little tips here and there. And that was definitely helpful. But I have to tell this story of I auditioned for this same project. I think it was that project or it might have been something different. But I auditioned for a project a year prior and it's unrelated, but basically I was given the wrong address to the studio. And so I went to the building beside the studio that I was supposed to go to. But what was crazy was the person that I talked to in that building thought that I was there for a job interview. And because I had never done an in-studio voice audition before, right, at that time, right, this was one of my first in-studio auditions because I was mostly doing MP3. Because of that, I was like, okay, well, maybe, you know, this is how it's supposed to be, right? There aren't any other actors around in the waiting room. It's just me and this other person. And this person leads me down a hallway and into a room with no microphone. It was just a table and two chairs. And I was thinking to myself going, well, maybe we're just going to talk a little bit before we go in to record the audition. And she goes up to me and she says, did you fill out the paperwork that I sent you? And I said, do you mean the non-disclosure agreement that I'm supposed to sign for my audition? And she goes, non-disclosure agreement? No, the paperwork that I sent to you, silly. And I go, I think I'm in the wrong place. And I explained to her what I was supposed to be doing. And she goes, oh, that's the building next door. Just go there. You'll be okay. And thankfully I was there super early. So I still got to my audition on time, but it was just a really wild first audition story.
Well, you never know. You could have ended up with two jobs. Do you know what I mean? At the same time, that would have been fantastic. Things happen for a reason. So when starting out, did you have a plan in place of what you wanted to achieve within the voice industry? You know, working with certain people or working on certain shows and awards, etc.
Well, I definitely owe a lot of people in this business babysitting money. And what I mean by that is I grew up watching a lot of my peers and colleagues on TV when I was a kid. Right. So that's what I mean by babysitting money. But I, you know, like I've been working with a lot of them for a really long time and now it's been really great. In terms of, you know, trajectory, I was just so focused on doing a good job. So I wasn't really thinking necessarily about, okay, this is where I'm going to be in a year. This is where I'm going to be in 5 years. I was just trying to focus on consistently putting good work out there, you know, just to, you know, develop a reputation for being good at what I do. That was really a focus. But of course, you know, every once in a while you think about like, okay, I want to book like a full on animated series, or maybe I want to work on a video game or an anime dub or whatever it is. Those thoughts definitely crossed my mind, but I definitely tried to make a conscious effort to just be like, okay, let's just focus on putting good work out into the world and developing a good reputation, and then maybe things will happen. Mm. So that was my fault. Yeah.
I mean, during the pandemic, I've got to say that there was a lot of people out there that thought, do you know what? I'm going to grab a mic. I'm going to grab an audio interface, and I'm going to take a stab at being a vocal artiste. Mm. I mean, obviously, it's not as easy as that. So let's squash these sort of pre-expectations. I mean, how hard is the job? I mean, you know, on a scale of 1 to 10, how hard is it to make it as a voice actor?
Oh, that's a loaded question. So it's a good question. It's, I think, you know, I would especially say now, you know, especially because of the internet. Right. I mean, we've had the internet for a long time now, I would say. Right. The industry is definitely like everyone wants to do it, or a lot of people want to do it. And I think that some people don't necessarily. You have to be realistic to a certain degree. Right. And you have to understand that it's probably going to take time. You know, I was coming up in the business, you know, I think I got what 15 years ago, I got my first agent. But I tell people, you know, and this was back when not everyone wanted to do it yet. Some people did, right? But I think I'm noticing that a lot more people now want to do it than 15 years ago. So for as an example, I just made my own little demo tape on my own at my desktop computer and sent that to an agent. I don't really think that would fly now. Right? They're going to want something a bit more professional quality than what I had done, as an example of how things have changed. But I also say too, it took me like 4 years to book my first gig, right? And that's what a lot of people don't realize. And it's about, quite frankly, just doing your best to stay in it for better or for worse. And I'll add one more thing to that. You know, people are so focused on the equipment side of things. I know, right? And I get it. I mean, I have a home studio. I joke and say that I'm in my shower, but it's my studio. But you really want to prioritize your craft and your artistry as a performer. Really prioritizing acting, you know, taking acting classes, workshops, right? But even just like, again, if you can't do that for whatever reason, I would encourage people to read aloud 10 minutes a day, 15 minutes a day, right? But just staying consistent with little habits to basically grow your skill set, basically. So it's a really loaded question. I have a lot of thoughts about it, but yeah.
I mean, you know what? You're right, because there's people out there that get these great mics and these great audio interfaces, and yet they haven't focused on the craft. And it's a bit like, give a man a pen, but give the pen to Shakespeare and look what happens. Right. So it is literally solely down to the person, doing the craft. I mean, to be fair, I did a degree in performing arts for acting and everything like that many moons ago. And I've always wanted to try voice acting or voiceover. But in all fairness, I think it will be an insult to people like yourself that I haven't got that time to commit to, honing that craft. And I wouldn't want to try and take a stab at it, because I think that, you know, if you want to go into something, you've got to go in 110%. You've got to really want it 110% and not just have a go at it, because, you know, there's too many people out there that want to be voice actors, but that's because they can do a few voices. But it takes a lot of work and commitment and time and effort. I mean, as you said, 4 years. 4 years before you booked a gig. But yeah, you're right as well with the internet. There's so many opportunities, but there's so many dodgy websites as well that you can register to, and they'll get you work, apparently, that people fall in that trap. So on the topic of the pandemic as well, I mean, you know, do you go to conventions? Because I've noticed a lot of people still now, so right out of the pandemic, a lot of voice actors still wear face masks at conventions. And obviously your voice is your tool. You know, I suppose, you know, you want to protect it. Is that something that you do at conventions? Do you attend them? And would you also wear that face mask? Just out of curiosity.
Yeah, so I'll do the occasional convention here and there. A lot of the conventions that I do are more geared toward My Little Pony. And it's been really quickly on that, you know, like I've had a lot of really positive experiences at these shows. A lot of the conventions that I've been to have mask policies. So we're actually required to wear masks in like certain areas. And I do the best I can to follow those. When it comes to actually meeting with the fans in my autograph line, what I usually do is I have a mask on standby, but I usually take mine off when I'm signing just so that I can interact with them that way. They're usually masked up though, in my experience. And when I take pictures with them, I ask if, you know, since we're going to get a little close, would you like me to wear one or would you like to take yours off? Right. I definitely try to have that dialogue because everyone has a different, comfort level, really.
How times have changed, I've got to say.
Yeah.
And then the last question around the pandemic, how annoyed are the voice community around all these actors that we see on screen day in, day out that took to voice work during the pandemic?
No, I, you know, I know I've been asked this question a lot before, right? Like, you know, I've been asked, you know, how do you feel about celebrities taking voice acting work in animation, right? Disney, Pixar, all that stuff. Excuse me. And I say this, you know, and I feel like my answer is going to be very similar in regards to, at the end of the day, we're all actors, we're all artists, and we're all storytellers. And, you know, they want to pursue other creative endeavors too. You know, I work in on camera as well. You know, not as much. And that's mostly because there aren't enough hours in the day to focus on both. For me personally, I feel for my own sanity, I've had to pick, right? But everyone wants to, you know, pursue other creative endeavors, right? It's all storytelling and it's all acting at the end of the day, right? So for me, my stance is, you know, provided that you work hard and you're not phoning it in on the day, and you know, you're doing your best, like, then I have no problem. I don't really have a problem with it, honestly, you know? But I also said to a lot of people that originally came from on camera that wanted to start pursuing voice, I said, absolutely go for it. But you know, put the time in. You're going to want to watch cartoons, right? You're going to want to get a feel for the various worlds of animation that we, you know, that we audition for, right? In order to be competitive with those of us that have been doing it for a really long time.
Do you know what? That is such a lovely answer. And I've got to say that I'm sure if we was out on a night out with you and Ian Hanlon and the rest of the gang, I am sure there'll be a few other words said. But no, you're right. I mean, if they want to take a stab at it, why not? Do you know what I mean? I mean, I wanted to just touch on My Little Pony, because it's one of these franchises that literally has been going for decades. I mean, decades. Mm. I mean, I can remember my sister. So I'm 44 and I can remember my sister having a My Little Pony and the saddle came off and it was like a little, like, sort of, safe that she could keep stuff in. And you have voiced this lovely character here.
Oh!
There we go. And you said you've been to quite a few conventions. And I don't know if you've watched the documentary about the conventions around My Little Pony. I think are they called Brownies?
I think they're called Brownies. A lot of them call themselves Brownies, yeah.
Yeah, Brownies. And it's such a lovely environment. It really is. And even though I'm 44 and I've got two little girls that love My Little Pony, they love all these cartoons. So they're quite excited that I've got you on the show, because I've been saying it's him, he's doing the voice, and they're starting. I mean, my 10-year-old is literally getting into it, and she wants to do voice work. She wants to be an actor and everything like that. So I've got to embrace it. I mean, what's it like being part of such a, you know, a well-known franchise and lending your talent to this character?
It's crazy because, and I say this all the time, you know, because I know that a number of people over the years have come up to me going, you know, why are you engaging with the community as much as you are? And I always say, you know, about over 95% of my interactions with this community have been overwhelmingly positive. And, you know, and I say to them at these shows, at these conventions, I say, you know, we did My Little Pony, Friendship is Magic, right? We did in Vancouver, we did what, 9 seasons? We did like 4 Equestria Girl, right? I'm in the Equestria Girls universe of My Little Pony. We did 4 of those movies. We did a spin-off short series, right? Based off of My Little Pony Equestria Girls, right? That's where Timber Spruce, you know, lived kind of in the worlds, as well as a bunch of like feature-length theatrical animated films. And so we did a lot over the course of what, 10 years, 12 years, right? I don't know the exact time frame. And I say to a lot of the convention attendees, I say, you know, if it wasn't for all of you continuing to watch the show, continuing to support the show, this franchise, right? This iteration of the My Little Pony universe, right? Because as you said, it's been going on for a really long time. We wouldn't have gone for as long as we did. Therefore, I wouldn't have had a chance to audition. Therefore, I wouldn't have been able to book the part, right? And I, you know, this was one of my first like big original animated projects was My Little Pony. I think I recorded this like 7 years ago, 6 or 7 years ago now at this point, right? And we're still talking about it, which I think is kind of cool, you know? But if it wasn't for the community supporting and watching and buying the toys and all the merchandise, right, we wouldn't have gone on for as long as we did. And so for that, I'm really grateful.
And it's a franchise that will keep on going on for many, many years because it's just great. And I just like shows that I think that's what many shows are missing now is that, you know, My Little Pony and shows like that promote just a good feeling, just something positive, something nice. And you know, with that, you know, hidden message within it as well for the kids. I just think it's great. I mean, you get too many shows that now that are just too graphic and sort of, I don't know, desensitizes the kids. And I think that we should keep kids for as long as we can because, you know, the internet, unfortunately, is affecting that. Then I wanted to ask, what's that, sorry?
Oh, he's gone!
He's gone, yeah, he's gone. He's tumbled away. He's tumbled away.
Little tumble.
I mean, what I wanted to ask as well is, obviously, with characters like Timber Spruce and the many characters that you've portrayed, you know, on screen with your awesome voice. I mean, how do you get those voices for the characters? Because it always astonishes me because, you know, when you're on screen, I suppose you're using your body and everything like that and you've got the character. Is it the same sort of thing? Because when you're auditioning for, say, a character and you've never heard sort of their voice really, I mean, how do you get to that finished voice? Is that something you sort of work with, you know, the vocal directors or the show runners or someone else? I mean, it confuses me. So hopefully you'll be able to shed some light on it for me.
Yeah. So on the day, right, like unless you're recording an audition in studio, right, with the production team, you're recording on your own via MP3 in your little studio, right? You know, and so sometimes if you book the gig, on the first day, we may have a conversation about the character and what the creative team is looking for. Of course, as an actor, I do feel responsible for, you know, bringing my own ideas to the table so that both sides can collaborate, right? It's a collaboration at the end of the day. And that's one of the things that I love about it, honestly. I really do enjoy collaborating with, you know, the show director, the voice director, all the executive producers and all of that. That's really fun for me. As far as my specific, you know, way of going about it, I just treat everything like it's acting. So I don't really, you know, I don't really focus on, you know, oh, I'm auditioning for on camera. Oh, I'm auditioning for cartoons or video games. I try to treat everything the same in terms of I'm trying to, you know, essentially breathe life into this other character, whatever medium of performance it actually might be, right? Whether it be on camera or behind the microphone. I will say though, when it comes to animation, especially, one of the things that I do ask often is I go, what world does this character live in, right? Like what's my audience or who's my audience? And that will definitely affect some of the choices that I make, right? For example, if you're auditioning for the DC animated universe versus auditioning for like a Nickelodeon series, right? That's going to be really different, right? You're going to probably make creative choices. So I'll keep that in mind for sure.
I mean, do you find, you know, because you've been on screen, you've been, and obviously the voice world, do you find that when you're recording a voice, you feel a bit less self-conscious? Because obviously you use your body and, you know, to get these awesome voices out, you know, you're not worried about what you look like as you're doing it. Or do you? I mean, from my point of view, I would probably feel a lot less conscious of the fact of what I look like, because at the end of the day, it's about the voice. I mean, do you feel that way?
Yes. No, absolutely. It's one of the things that I like about cartoons. I'm really physical when I record. That's just how I work. And I just kind of listen to my body and I just go. Of course, I'm going to, you know, play around with ideas creatively, like creative choices, in preparation for the record. I'll do that. But when I'm on the day recording, I'm not necessarily worrying about how I look or what my body's doing. The only thing that I have to be careful of sometimes is if we're in an ensemble record, right? We're all recording together. Sometimes I'm really physical and I don't want to accidentally nudge the actor beside me, right? That's one thing that I am a little conscious of for sure.
I mean, do you think that that's changed since the pandemic? I know we keep on talking about the pandemic, but it has affected a lot of things. I mean, recording in the studio with the other actors. I mean, does that still happen a lot more now? Or have they thought, wait a second, with people like yourself with these lovely, you know, booths, you know, we're going to not get everyone in the same room. I mean, do you still get a chance to go into the studio with all the actors together?
Yeah. So, you know, the Vancouver voice community, we have always been known to record all of our cartoons and animation projects ensemble. So we'll record together. Obviously, when COVID happened, right, at the start of the pandemic, we all stopped recording ensemble. We would go in one at a time. So I wasn't necessarily recording my jobs from here, right? I was still going in to studio in Vancouver, but I wasn't recording with a large group. It was just me. Now though, over the last, I would say year, we've started to slowly trickle back into ensemble. So I'm currently working on a cartoon right now and we're all recording together and it's just a lot of fun. So we're definitely back in Vancouver. Mm. I can't really speak for the other, markets or jurisdictions, but in Vancouver we are.
Yeah, I can imagine as well, being all together, that energy is completely different. You know what I mean? You can play off each other and it's just a lot better. So hopefully it's more of that. I've got to say as well, Vancouver, I've got to say 90% of my guests live in Vancouver. I have just got an image of a big apartment complex where you all live. Because yeah. I was interviewing Wilson Cruz from Star Trek Discovery, and he said that below him there were some actors from Snowpiercer, and I've just got this vision of you all in the same apartment building, going down and getting your mail, and just going, "You're right." And yeah, it's just a little. Is that the case? Is that the case?
I would say, I mean, I would definitely say that, like, the Vancouver voice community, the majority of us know each other in some way, shape, or form. And it's like, you know, it's a community and it's definitely a lot of fun. Yeah, I haven't been as, you know, I don't really know what to say to that. I haven't been as connected, with the on-camera community, in the last couple of years. I'm still working on set. Right. But the voice community, definitely, like, a lot of us know each other, and a lot of us keep in touch. Which is really nice. It's fun.
And talking about on camera, an awesome series, which is the awesome Family Law, which I had Jewel stay on the show a little while back, which was always a pleasure. What was that like to work on? Because I haven't caught up, because this is for this current season, isn't it, that you're on? Is it aired yet? Or, because in the UK, we get left behind quite a lot.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I've heard that. I'm sorry. Oh, boy. I think my episode of this show, of Family Law, I think it aired in Europe or some other parts of the world, but I actually think it aired, my episode aired yesterday in North America. If I'm remembering correctly, yeah, it aired yesterday in February 14th. Yesterday was Valentine's Day. I don't know what day this be released. But working on the set, you know, it's an all Canadian cast. It takes place in Vancouver, which I think is really cool. And working with Jewel was just a treat. And she really welcomes all of the actors, onto set. It was a really, really great experience, quite
frankly.
And
did you work with Victor Garber at all?
I don't believe so. I don't believe I had a scene with him. We were in a courtroom.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Okay, say no more. You're in trouble. Okay. So I've got to... But no, I mean, it's great. It's great to see you on screen as well. You did Supergirl. And Wayward Pines, I think, as well. I mean, Supergirl, again, one of my favorite shows. You can tell I'm a bit of a nut about Superman and stuff like that. And you know, I just think they're great, great shows. I mean, would you want to do more on screen if you was offered? Or I know you said that you preferred voice. I mean, if the right role came about, would you grab it?
Yes. Oh my gosh, yeah. In a heartbeat. In a heartbeat, absolutely. Yeah, I really enjoy, you know, like once you're on set especially, it's just the best job in the world, right? Because there are so many moving parts on the day. And just to be a part of that, it's just a really cool experience. I will always have a soft spot for animation just because, you know, that was the reason why I pursued this in the first place. But as I've gotten older, right, and I've chosen to diversify and do all of these different things, you know, I've found so much joy doing this. And I think also too, that contributes to, you know, just allowing myself to stay in the industry for as long as I have is just because I love it so much. So absolutely.
And the great, great thing about it as well is that you've got many, many years as a voice actor, because it's not about necessarily what you look like or your age or anything like that. It's about your voice and your talent, which is great. I mean, have you got a preference on the style of animation that you like to voice for, or the type of character that you like to do the most?
Well, I do. I know that I'm known for a lot of kid stuff, which I like. I enjoy doing that stuff. The one thing that I am always kind of looking for, just because I like the challenge for me, is I want to do more. I want to do some more adult animation, or stuff that's just a bit darker. Stuff that's a bit edgier. One, because I just think it'll be a really cool challenge for me as an actor, but I also think, it's just fun to do something different every once in a while.
I mean, we're seeing a lot more adult animation coming out with James Gunn's new animator. I think it's called Commandos or something like that, the new DC one, which apparently Frank Grillo, the actor that's voicing one of the characters, said it's very, very, risque in the way of the material. So it's definitely not one for the kids. So we talk about auditioning. How do voice actors actually audition? Because, you know, I know with, you know, normal acting, you go into a room. Do they, you know, just hear your voice and then know that you'll be capable from your talent from that audition piece to take on the role? I mean, how does that work?
So, you know, a lot of us record from our own little recording setups, you know, first. Sometimes there will be callbacks, right? And usually those callbacks will be either in studio with production, or we'll probably do it over Zoom, right? One or the other. But I think one of the things as well is, I think, just being mindful of the fact that, from my understanding, just, you know, they have to make sure that all the characters sound different, and they don't want to hire two actors that are making very similar vocal choices, right? Because, you know, that'll get really confusing. So that's definitely one of the things too that they're looking for, is just making sure that all of the voices of all of the characters complement each other. I think that's definitely part of the process. But also just, you know, having a good time. I think that's a big part of it too. It's really just be really important.
I mean, you said at the beginning of our chat about when you were a kid, you thought that these voices were made of robots. How crazy is that now we've got AI and how things have sort of changed? And we had all the strikes recently. Yeah. Around AI and pay and everything like that. I mean, how do you think AI is going to affect the voice community, because don't get me wrong, there are websites out there that you can actually hire a voiceover actor to do a intro for your website, or and they don't sound good at all. They still, to me, sound, they haven't got the emotion, they haven't got the heart in that voice, and you can tell it's a robot. So how do you think AI is going to affect the industry going forwards?
Well, it's as you said, right? You don't hear the heart or like the essence essentially of a human, right, behind it. And I will say that, you know, at the end of the day, artificial intelligence can only be just as good as us, right? They can't be better than us because they're not human, right? And so, you know, don't get me wrong, I think it's really important that we as a community, right, a community of actors, artists, performers, storytellers, whatever you want to call us, it's definitely really important to, you know, we have to protect ourselves, right? In our contracts, it's really important that we have protections in place that safeguard our likeness, right? Either vocally or, you know, facially, right? All of that stuff. But it's also, I think, really important to remember that at the end of the day, you know, I do think that humanity is going to prevail in this sense. I do have hope for that because, as you said again, right, like they can't replace the human condition like 1,000%.
Mm. So basically you're saying Skynet isn't coming anywhere close to us yet.
it's growing every, like it's developing and changing all the time, right? But I also know that there's a lot of government lobbying and legislation, right? Like that's been public knowledge too for a while.
I mean, it's crazy when I heard that James Earl Jones actually sold the rights to his sound of his voice because of Star Wars, which I think is crazy because now they can manipulate and reuse his voice, which fair enough, if he's going to sell it, why not? But yeah, you're right. There needs to be protection there. And it just seems like everywhere you look, people are slowly being outdone by a job by some sort of computer, or the studio is trying to make it cheaper for themselves. And like I've said previously with the SAG strikes, is that me as a consumer of the stuff that you do, I would want to know that you were getting paid and treated fairly. It's a bit like buying your coffee, you know. You want to get fair trade. You want to make sure the workers are treated correctly and paid the correct amounts, because I'm not going to pay a subscription fee to watch a robot. Do you know what I mean? Or to hear a robot, you know? I think it's not going to, I think people are going to stand up and I think the SAG strikes did wonders for the community, to be fair.
Yeah, agreed. And I think, with regards to the James Earl Jones note that you mentioned, you know, I think like it's gonna take care of his family too, right? But I don't have the specifics, but there must be a really solid contract in place that protects him. And I'm sure SAG-AFTRA was all over that.
Yeah, I bet. Yeah. And I still can't believe the president of SAG is the nanny. I used to watch that when I was a kid.
I think it's so cool. Yeah. She's great. I really.
It's fantastic. So you've worked on so many shows. I keep saying that because you have, because literally I could list the shows and that would be just the interview in itself. But most recently you did a game, which is part of a massive, massive franchise. And I'm going to bring up the picture now, which is Avatar. What was that like? And now, literally, that is so cool to be part of James Cameron's sort of universe. I mean, what was that like to work on? Because you played the character Hatsu.
Yeah, Hatsu, yeah. Yeah. Yeah, and a bunch of additional voices and all that stuff. That was fun. That was really fun. We don't get told often, right, what we're reading for when it comes to games. You just get a little bit of specifics on the character. They don't tell you what it's for, and you just go, right? And that's the business. That's okay, right? It's my job as the actor to come in with ideas. And when I found out that this was what I was working on, I got really excited. And I'll also just say too, and I know that I may sound like a broken record at this point, but the creative team on this project was just a delight to work with. Just really collaborative. I had a dialect coach to help me work on the Navi dialect as well. And that was a really cool experience. I had never done that before. Also, please don't ask me to do it because I don't remember it. It was a really long time ago. Oh, there he is. Yeah. But it was a really fun experience. And just to be able to work on a game of this size was just a real treat.
I mean, obviously Avatar is massive, and you say that you don't always know what project that you're going for. So something this big. So when you go for it, is then the contract negotiated after you realize what it's for? Because it's a bit like hoodwinking you a bit, because, you know, they could be getting you cheap when at the end of the day, it's a big project. I mean, I presume that once you know, then contracts are done.
Yeah. So all of these jobs, like this was under an ACTRA contract. So that's the Canadian Actors Union up in Canada. And so basically because there's already a contract in place. So I didn't really have to necessarily worry about that too much, because we already have a fair amount of protections. We have minimum rates already, right? So they can't pay us below that. So there were already a lot of things in place that protect us. So I didn't really have to, for a role like this, I didn't really have to worry about anything like that.
Good. Good, because I know what the studios are like. I have learned a lot during these strikes, and I was quite shocked on the stuff. And it was great these strikes happened, because I think it educated everyone around the world exactly what you guys go through or have gone through. And I think that things are happening in Canada as well, if I'm right in saying. There's rumblings in Canada regarding the unions. Am I right in saying that, or I might have got that wrong?
So every couple of years we renegotiate, right? Similar to SAG-AFTRA, right? And so, negotiations take place, we'll see what happens.
So
I don't know. I'm sorry.
No, it is fine. It was just that, when you scroll through the internet, you never know what to believe and what not, to believe. I mean, obviously you've worked with so many great people within the industry, but is there a white whale of a performer that you'd love to work alongside in the industry, or a project like a show that you would love the chance of working on?
I'm really, really enjoying Invincible right now.
Mm-hmm.
The animated series Invincible. I'm really enjoying that. Particularly, I just think it's really cool. I mean, the character Mark, right? He's a Chinese Caucasian, and so am I. And I just think that's kind of cool. And so to be a part of that world would be a real treat. It would be a lot of fun.
And what about actual voice actors? I mean, there is so many legends out there. I mean, is there anyone that you would love to work with?
I would really like to work with Eric Bauza. He just won a bunch of Emmys for the Looney Tunes. And he also just happens to be Filipino Canadian, which is kind of cool. And I think he's fantastic. His range is crazy good. So just getting into a studio and doing an ensemble record with him, that would be a lot of fun.
That's awesome. And so what's next for you? Because obviously you're very, very busy. I mean, is there anything that you can share that maybe you're working on next, or is there going to be an NDA blowing up somewhere by you telling me?
I'm really excited that we got to talk after Avatar came out honestly. I'm really happy that we were able to talk about it today. I haven't really been able to talk about it much, right, since it came out. So this was really fun. As far as new projects go, I'm under NDA for a bunch of things right now still. And, when they come out, I will definitely be posting them on my socials and I'll be able to talk about them then.
Excellent. And on this video, if you're watching it, I'm going to put Brian's links for everything, for his website, Instagram, Twitter, all at the bottom. So please give him a follow. And a question I normally ask all my guests is, if your life was a movie, what title would it have?
If my life was a movie.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, it's right in front of me right here. I want to say Be More Super. That's what I want to say.
There we go.
I don't know. Yeah, that is such a cop-out answer though, buddy.
It's all right. I've had some weird answers. I really have. So no, it's fine. It's fine. True. Maybe you're at the stage where, do you know what? You're still living it. So you're still maybe halfway through that movie and you haven't got to the point where actually a title would be justified.
How about Avocado Adventures? How about that? What if we did that? We'll say that for now. That's the placeholder.
God knows where you pulled them from, because you just appeared out. I've just got visions of what the hell. I've just got a vision of all these cuddly like things behind you. But Brian, it's been an absolute pleasure to have you on, and it's been great to get a bit of insight of the voice community, because it's something that I don't think gets recognized enough in the normal sort of media. I think that we concentrate on people in front of the camera, and it's great to put a face to the voices that we hear day in, day out on our TV. So thank you so much for coming onto the show. Keep safe and stay super.
Thank you so much, Brian. Really appreciate it.
Thank you for listening to Be More Super, the podcast. This podcast has been brought to you by PropStore.com. If you enjoyed this episode and you'd like to help support the podcast, please subscribe and leave a rating and review. To stay up to date with Be More Super and get all the behind-the-scenes content, you can follow us on Instagram at Be More Super the Podcast and on Twitter at Be More Super. Keep safe and stay super.